Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
I'm Tom Howard, and this is Gravel Notes. The form book was thrown out of the window at Rally Sweden as Hyundai's Esa Pekka Lappi ended a winless drought that stretched 6 years, 6 months, and 19 days in what was a remarkable performance on the snow-covered roads in Sweden. He beat Elfyn Evans, Toyota's leading contender, by 29.7 seconds, while returning world champion Kalle Rovanperä was the odds-on favourite to take victory, but crashed out on the opening day after winning the first two stages. He was also followed by title contender Ott Tänak, and then Toyota's Takamoto Katsuta, who looked like he was going to be in the frame to score a maiden win. We have a lot to talk about from Rally Sweden, so here we go. I'm Tom Howard, and joining me once again is my co-driver Luke Barry as we take a look back at Rally Sweden last weekend. Luke, welcome back on board. It's good to have you. It was one of those wild rallies where, you know, there was just so much to talk about. It was must have been a great watch for you as well.
Yeah, far too much to talk about, I think. Not to say I haven't been excited for podcasts we've done in the past, but this one, it feels like there's plenty to really get ourselves stuck into. But the one thing I do immediately wonder is whether Hyundai is going to declare that Lappi's Sweden livery is a one-off tribute now as well, like they did with Neuville in Monty. Bit cheeky there for me, but if you understand the joke, you'll get it. But there we go.
I suppose the Lappi livery's got a nice ring to it, hasn't it?
It does.
But yeah, let's obviously dive into it. Obviously, the big story being Esa Pekka Lappi, a real feel-good story for the WRC. Such a lovely guy, a real character, the paddock, lots of funny one-liners, a very smiley character. He's much loved, and I think there would be no one that would have been disappointed to see him win there in Sweden.
Yeah, completely correct, I think. Lappi, it was... Well, he said it to you in itself in a story that's on the website, hasn't he? That he honestly at points doubted whether this win would ever come. And it's amazing to think about the journey, because we've all known how good a driver Lappi is. Obviously, he won sensationally in Finland 6.5 years ago, as you said in the intro. That was only his fourth ever start at the top level. So at that point, the world is at his feet. But for whatever reason, and for several near misses, he's just never quite got there again until last weekend. So it was amazing to see that, because not to say that he's still capable, because I think we all knew that he's still capable. It's amazing to see that it would happen, because he deserves it. He really does deserve that second win. And with how he drove at the weekend as well, in such difficult conditions to master that, and then obviously to play the sort of sensible waiting game for the best part of 2 days when his nearest rival ended up stuck in a snowbank on Saturday morning. So it was a very, very accomplished performance. And yeah, just hats off to him and Yanni. Couldn't be happy for them to get that second win.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, there's such a great double act, as you say there, but he was just sort of glad to get across that finish line. It must have been such a difficult final, you know, Saturday afternoon and final day on Sunday, given that he had such a lead, and you don't want to make a mistake given, you know, the advantage that he had. But it wasn't an easy drive for him, I guess, even though he sort of he could have the luxury of backing off.
Well, they always say this, don't they, in motorsport, I guess, particularly rallied to an extent with all the various different obstacles in your way across a special stage. But if you start backing off, it's often actually harder to drive, because you're thinking about what's around. Like, obviously, you and I don't know, we're not professional rally drivers, but I can't imagine there's a lot of, obviously they know where the risks are, where the dangers are, but there's not a lot of contemplating how quick you're going and what could go wrong and what might happen if you're driving at maximum. You're just concentrating on being fast. But as soon as you've got something to lose, i.e. he's got a lead of over a minute, all of a sudden everything becomes a scare or a problem or anything. So to do that for, as I say, the best part of 2 days, it cannot be easy at all. But as I say, he didn't fluff it at all. I think he managed his pace perfectly from there. He didn't back off too much to give everybody else a bit of a sniff of a win, but he didn't push hard and jeopardize anything or make any mistakes. So yeah, it was just a very, very accomplished performance. I guess he did obviously have the benefit of starting in a good road position on Friday, but there were others around him that didn't manage to make it through Friday. So yeah, you cannot take anything away from EP at all. And he's done the ultimate job that Hyundai would ask for. One of their contenders fell, but Lappi was there, and he did more than just pick up the pieces. He won the rally for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I guess, you know, that's the exact reason they've hired him, isn't it? He's a very capable set of hands. And let's not forget what he did last year as well, too. Obviously, in Sardinia, as he said in the interview there, he was very close to being on that sort of precipice of really going for a maiden win and actually beating Ogier in that occasion. But obviously, team orders played its role there, and Thierry was given the nod. But let's also remember that he's done a lot of work to develop that I-20 last year to the point where Hyundai are now in this position where they've won 2 out of 2 from the start of the season. I'm not saying he's done, but he can credit all the work to EP, but he's definitely played a big role in this sort of revival of Hyundai.
100%. I think he's a very, very valued team member. And I think it's easy. It's like everyone says, you're almost as good as your last result and stuff. But the start of last year in particular, Lappi was mega. Yes, there were times where he didn't always get it across the line. I'm thinking Mexico perhaps in particular, but he was really, as you said, they're knocking on the door of really top performances and top results. Just obviously the second half of the year got away from him, but it's really nice to see that he's back, he's remained, but he's also come back and he looks, and I like saying it's because of the classic Ryan, but he's a happy Lappy again, isn't he? With his part-time program, more time at home to spend with his family, which is what he was daily needing. So he's got that perfect balance now, which is, it's just really nice to see. I guess the sort of unfortunate thing for Hyundai, although I'm not sure it'll matter too much in Kenya, but because of his result, he's actually sitting not too badly in the championship. So he's going to have actually a decent, or a fairly sort of mid-rank rather than the low starting position on Friday in Kenya. But we're not worried about that yet. That's 5-6 weeks away, so we're not detract from Hyundai's success just yet. But even that in itself, in fairness, like Hyundai has never, ever won both the opening rounds of the WRC before, ever, which in itself, I think, speaks volumes for the season we're going to have ahead.
Yeah, as I said, there was a lot of people knocking the WRC when obviously Kelly made his decision not to do a full-time season. But I think we've actually landed in quite a very exciting title battle now, and the way that it's all playing out. And especially, I guess, you know, it's now tied to the new point system, which we'll come on to, as that was a controversial moment, I suppose, in this rally too. But also, it's worth saying that, you know, what a feel-good win and a feel-good story for the WRC with EP. Obviously, they... Yeah, this victory coming in at Sweden 12 months on from where Craig Breen obviously had an extraordinary performance for the team, and he was very much in their thoughts on the weekend. You know, on the podium there was a picture of Craig held up, and they were all wearing Craig Breen beanie hats to sort of acknowledge what had happened 12 months ago and the tragic loss that the sport had suffered since. So a very sort of, everyone sort of went away, I think, quite happy with that result.
Yeah, it's actually quite hard to add too much to that, to be fair. That was very well said. But I guess the scenario the rally will set itself up into with the sort of chaos on Friday is that it looked like we were going to have either a Lappi win, a second win, or a maiden Katsuta win. So I think either would have been a brilliant story for the championship. But you're dead right. I think it was really quite touching to see the sort of respect paid to Craig over the weekend, because it's easy to forget that was his last WRC rally. And obviously the way he performed on it was amazing. So I think it was right, and it was fitting, and it was touching to see that on the podium for sure from Hyundai.
Well, we should move on to the next sort of interesting topic, shall we say, and that is obviously Elfyn Evans finished second in the rally, but he's left Sweden with more points than anyone else from the weekend, with 24, and Esa-Pekka Lappi only scoring 19, the rally winner. And this is all because of the new point system. So just to sort of help the listeners that perhaps don't know about the point system, how that has worked out is that Elfyn Evans finished third at the end of Saturday, where 13 points are handed out, and the top performer on Saturday is offered 18 points. On Sunday, there's 7 points up for grabs for the fastest driver over the 3 stages, or however many stages there are on Sundays, or what is known as the Super Sunday classification now. So Elfyn Evans finished on top of that. And he also claimed 4 points from the power stage at the rally end there. It could have been 5 if he hadn't eclipsed a snowbank there. He missed out by a tenth of a second. So he ended up actually scoring 24 points, while Lappi only scored 19. And obviously there was a lot of discussion about how the new point system devalues a win. And this is the first time where we've sort of seen that. But what are your thoughts on the situation about this, Luke? Obviously, it's an interesting debate, isn't it? Because Sunday was clearly more exciting, which is what the new point system is designed to do. But we do have now the situation where the rally winner has not ended the weekend with the most points.
Yeah, it's a big topic, isn't it? And I have to say, we're talking about it just there with Lappi's result being great for the WRC. This is like a worst case scenario, I think yeah. Almost, with these points. If I'm being brutally honest, I knew this was a possibility. I didn't necessarily think it would happen. And I'm not over convinced it will happen much more throughout the season. If it does, it'll be maybe once or at most twice, because I understand the arguments that it's not, for a purist and sort of pedantic level, it is a bit weird that the driver that hasn't won the rally can not score the most points. But I saw some people suggesting it was like unfair and all this kind of stuff. But that to me is nonsense, because if Lappi wanted to get 12 extra points, he could have done. Nothing was stopping him doing that. He just decided not to because of the situation he was in. And this is why I think it's a bit of a sort of a one-off scenario, because in most cases, if that was... So I made it quite clear in the pre-Sweden podcast, for example, that I expected Robin Perra to win this one. If that was Cowie at the front, I know we sort of joked about it and discussed it, but I'd be very surprised if he didn't take at least a decent handful of Sunday points and something on the Perra stage, which would then, even if he didn't outscore second place by a lot, he still would have walked away with the most points. The Lappi scenario was very unique in that he had such a big advantage. He had no interest in fighting for the extra points because he's not in a driver's championship battle, and he didn't want to be taking those points off of his teammates who were trying, they needed them because they weren't having a stronger weekend. So it's a funny one. I do agree that it's not ideal, but I just don't, it just doesn't offend me. Like, I think it's offended quite a lot of others personally. I think purely, as I say, because I don't see it being a regular occurrence. And in a way, it's a quirk. Like, we're all talking about it, and there's things that maybe don't help. Like, I saw the WRC put a graphic out after the rally with the top 10 sort of scorers and stuff, and that sort of stuff, they probably didn't need to do that, if I'm honest, given the sort of social reaction. It probably wasn't helping themselves. But I don't think there's ever really a scenario where people... I put it this way, I don't think people are going to look back at Sweden and think that's the rally where Elvin Evans scored the most points, are they? They're not going to remember that. It's relevant for the season's narrative when you see, okay, he outscored Juvil Tanak by this or that, but Lappi's effectively irrelevant for the season narrative because he's not competing for the championship. So in that sense, it just doesn't... Yeah, I don't know. But there are definitely things that could be refined. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's perfect, and if it was down to me, I would still potentially do other things with it, but I don't think it's anywhere near as catastrophic as maybe some people are suggesting, in my opinion. That is,
yeah, what about no, you, Tom? I think honestly, you make a fair point there, because you're right, no one's going to say that. Like, I don't think EP is ever going to say that his win has been devalued, you know, because, you know, such, you know, was it more than 2,000 days since he's last had a win? So yeah, I agree, and I have to say, like, you have to agree, everyone has to agree that Sundays are now more exciting. And I think that was a clear yes. case on Sunday, because we had so much more going on. And even some team orders from Toyota, which is an incredibly rare occurrence, where we had Callie sort of helping Elfin to climb up that Sunday classification, which is, you know, it's brought another element into the sort of game. And I think they've really nailed making Sunday, you know, more special, more action. I think that's absolutely been, the box has been ticked there, but it's just this sort of situation now where I think if you have several occasions where the winner leaves with less points than someone who finishes behind him, that will be an issue. But as you say, I agree with you. I think if it's a one-off occasion, or, you know, one or two where that happens, I don't think it's a big drama. I agree with you on that. And I do actually think it's a very rare case that's going to happen. Certainly from the calculations I did using the point system on last year's results. Obviously, it's different because the drivers didn't, you know, maybe wouldn't push because, you know, didn't know about the point system then. But there was only a case where the top two ended with the same points from a weekend. So the chances of that happening seems to be quite low. But obviously,
yeah,
as you know, tactics will develop and people will come up with strategies, and you know, That could blow that theory completely out of the water. We just don't know. But until we get a few more samples, that is, we can't really...
I was going to say that. Sorry to cut across you, but yeah, that in itself, I think, is intriguing, the strategy point, because it is something they all have to think about now, and something that, as you see, we've seen it in all walks of motorsport, in rallying, in F1, everywhere, that as soon as new things come in, to start with, people are sort of feeling their way through it, but then they start to realise what the right way to play it is and how to maximise this or that. The Toyota stuff, even, as you say, that really intrigued me, I have to say. I'm still not sure if it was a team order or if it was a Robin Perra, somebody in his ear suggesting it, or if Cali himself just thought, you know what, maybe this is what I should do. But it worked, didn't it, to prevention?
Yeah, absolutely.
He got the second point, so denied Hyundai drivers extra. Evan has got the most points, helped in Collins and Newville's advantage. So it was expertly done from them, but as you say, very rare. So interesting to see from Toyota. But in fairness, actually, I'm just thinking about it now. I guess if I was to have a gripe with the points at the minute, and I'm thinking about Robin Perra in particular, for a driver that's, for want of a better phrase, crashed out of the rally, 11 points is a lot to get for a yeah. weekend, isn't it? It is quite a lot.
Yeah, that is
like,
a lot.
There is a lot weighted towards Sunday, which I guess maybe undoes some of the points I'm seeing, but that maybe is... Maybe there's a way that maybe the points aren't ditched as low as the top seven. Maybe I've seen some folks suggesting that the Paris stage is ditched and stuff. For me, that would be a big shame. Seeing the Paris stage can become a big staple of the show and it works. I can understand the logic, given coupled to the Sunday points, it's a lot. But maybe it's just Sunday points are top five or top three or something. And I don't know. But yeah, when I think about it, Robin Perra, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve some points because he drove well, but for... effectively, what was three stages, 11 points is quite a lot to take, isn't it?
No, that is very, very good point. I have to say, I hadn't really thought about that, actually, because you're right, that is a lot of points. But I guess this is where, you know, as I said, this might not be the final system that we go through, but I think at least the sport's trying something, and there has been some positives already. There obviously are, there's no, you know, you're not going to win over everyone, and there are still some negatives about it. It is quite complicated to explain to people. But the TV graphics were there this time around. So that was much better from that side already. And I think, you know, it just takes time. Once people get used to it, it's a bit like the Formula One qualifying systems and stuff like that. You know, it takes a bit of time to get your head around it. But once you get there, I do think we're going to have a very, very interesting title race because of the point system. So I guess that's what we want, isn't it, at the end of the day?
It is indeed. And as you say, I completely agree with basically everything you said there, in the sense of that, yes, I think this isn't perfect, but it's better. I do firmly actually believe having this in place is better than what we had last year, because it is creating more intrigue. I didn't follow Sunday in Monty as closely as I followed Sweden, for various reasons, but it was actually interesting for me this time to really see just how it worked, and I think it definitely makes a lot more sense. Like, I didn't find it confusing to follow when watching it live. I guess the difficult thing comes if you didn't watch it and you have to try and get your head around how somebody did that and everything, it can look a bit messy. But as I say, it's just such an interesting one, because you can get so wrapped up in the headline stats. Like, as we know, is it perfect that second place has scored more than first? No, it's not. But does it really matter? I don't know. I'm sort of struggling to see why it's such a big deal. I think it's easy to pick holes and stuff this early, but as we both said, really, I think the Sunday spectacle now is better, and that ultimately was the brief. So the right thing has been done. It's good to see Rowling has done something, because it would have been easy, we said it before, but it would have been easy for them to do nothing about it. And as you say, it's making the championship closer. If I've done my maths correctly, and I have done some maths, I believe
I'm gonna draw. We might need some music to this picture.
But looking at it, if we were using the 23 point system and the results had stayed the same, Newville's championship lead would have been 6 points, but as it stands, it's only 3. So that in itself, I guess, the argument, and pretty much everybody actually within the sort of top 6, 7, 8 positions in the championship has more points than we've done, apart from Lappi, which we've talked about, because obviously he didn't get most from Sweden. But yeah, I think it is doing its job. It's just these little quirks, I guess, particularly when it's new and it's a teething process, are going to upset people that maybe aren't a fan of it. It's an easy target, isn't it? But as you say, let's wait for the next sort of few rounds to see how it works. And yeah, I'd be very surprised if this particular scenario of second place outscoring first becomes regular, put it that way.
Now, the other controversial moment of this rally also involved Elfyn Evans and Thierry Neuville. And so, basically, if you didn't watch this action, ahead of stage six, Thierry Neuville stopped, couldn't refire his Hyundai. The bonnet came up. Him and Martin Vidago had a look, tried to get it fixed. They checked into the stage at 4 minutes late, incurred a 40-second penalty, but it also meant that they were no longer the road sweeper, the road opener, and Elfyn Evans took that disadvantage by having to go ahead of him in the afternoon's remaining stages. Obviously a massive disadvantage for Elfyn. Now, it was quite an interesting debate because as soon as Elfyn finished the stage, he already sort of suggested that there was some foul play going on from Thierry, who I think he said that the spirit of competition has gone out the window before then saying, oh, wait to cast judgment just to see what has happened, if that is true or not. Thierry refuted suggestions, saying there was no way he was playing silly games there. What are your thoughts, Luke? It certainly added some excitement to Friday.
It did. I won't lie. I loved it. Just the fact this now happened, I did love it. I love this kind of stuff. Whether it's intentional or not, no matter. It invoked emotions, and that's what we want between two championship fighters, isn't it? Because it's looking like these two are firmly in the race for this championship, as we expected. So a little bit of needle never harms, does it, from a narrative perspective? But yeah, it's an interesting one. I would be lying if I said it wasn't similar to Elvin's own snap judgment, because it did seem very convenient. I think for me, the interesting thing, and I know, Tom, you've got some good intel on this, but the interesting thing for me was just how passionate Thierry was in defending himself. It wasn't a case of batting it away and saying, oh, this is or that. He was very, very clear that he'd had the problem earlier in the day. He'd had it in refuel. Elvin should know that because Elvin had been in the refuel. I was actually speaking to a competitor in a lower class who said, and I can't remember at what point of the day he said he saw them, but he said he saw Thierry Martin like working on the car at a refuel and stuff. So if this was acting, it was done incredibly well. I think we have to take Hyundai and Thierry at the word of this. I think, yeah, it...
We're not handing an Oscar to Thierry Neuville just yet. He's
not just yet, but you know what? I think he wouldn't be too bad. He could have done well this week, couldn't he, at the awards? But I think, yeah, from Elvin's perspective, particularly because he'd just done the stage, he just had to deal with going through his first car on the road. I totally understand why, if you're sitting in the queue and all of a sudden, as if by nowhere, Thierry and Martin are out of the car and in you go to shuffle up, I get it. Maybe there's an argument to suggest that actually, is there something that could be done in the regulations to avoid this sort of thing? Say, for example, obviously Thierry was meant to be starting first on the road. Because he was in second, they obviously didn't get a certain amount of time to reach the next time control. But generally speaking, on WRC events, there's plenty of time within that to make it up. So is there a way that it could actually be that if somebody was meant to be somewhere but restarts, and it's possible, should they then go back to the front of the queue? I don't know. You then potentially opening a massive can of worms in other areas, but... Yeah, it was certainly interesting, is what I would say. But it seemed to be that, obviously, it got forgotten over the rest of the weekend, which is good. It wasn't something that rankled or annoyed everybody. I don't know what conversations were had between people. I wasn't in the service park, so I don't have that benefit of knowledge. But, yeah, it was certainly added a bit more spice to that particular stage, didn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was interesting, isn't it? I mean... It obviously it's very difficult to sort of cast judgment without sort of having both sides of the story. Certainly speaking to both drivers, Elfyn was still a little bit aggrieved at the end of the day when we spoke to him in the media zone, but he did say that if that was intentional, then Hyundai need to get a new strategist. So he didn't think it actually had benefited him, Thierry, that much. And okay, Thierry was quicker than him on the rest of the stages. Yeah, obviously Elfyn lost a lot of time, and obviously he was in the battle with Adrian Formeau as well, so that sort of played a role in that too, with the Saturday points on offer too as well. That would have had an effect, but certainly at the end of the day, media zone Friday, when Thierry and Martin went back to their car to refire it up to move to the final stage, they were struggling to get the car fired up again, and the engine was turning over, and it took a few times before it fired into life. So that would suggest that there was a problem, or again, if you know. It could be incredible acting, but I, for me, it looked like there was a genuine fuel pressure problem, which is what he said was the issue. And also, if we think about it, you also had the issue of like the risk of obviously getting under the bonnet and putting it down again. And we saw what happened in the fact that the bonnet pin broke and the bonnet started raising up, which would have been a distraction. And if the whole thing had gone, then such a play would have been a disaster because the bonnet would have come up and you wouldn't have been able to see anyway. To take that sort of extra risk as well. Anyway, it was an interesting debate nonetheless, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's interesting that the Elvin effect, isn't it, to think about it, is no matter whether this was intentional or not, it did cost Evans quite badly. Because I've not sat and worked out the calculations, and it's pretty difficult to do that because, as we know, you can never just change one variable and assume the rest all stay the same. It's not how multisport works. But I find it hard to see a scenario where Evans doesn't beat 4 mil to second on Saturday if he wasn't running first on the road. Because he lost, I think, even more than Thierry did, actually, running his first car. So I guess potentially maybe he had a different, slightly different setup on the car because knowing he didn't have to, I don't know. But yeah, I think that potentially cost him 2 points. But as you say, like, it's such a weird thing. And this is why I love scenarios like this in a way, because it's almost like we'll never know the true answer. But the whole thing was like perfectly crafted, wasn't it, to create a bit of a scenario. And from the rally gods, they look down like, okay, let's have this. Because as you say, if we are to believe Hindeye, I'm sounding very skeptical, but I do honestly think, I agree with you, Tom. I think there was too much here for this to be. Because at the end of the day, actually, if this was intentional, they weren't actually breaking any regulations. So they wouldn't have needed to be this intricate about it. If you know what I mean, they could have literally just stood in front of the bonnet, done nothing, and made Evans go. Because they could have forced his hand. They didn't have to, because it's a blurred line. This whole spirit of competition stuff is, that's not a regulation. Yes, there's ways you want to win and ways you don't want to win. But if this was something Hyundai had done, there is absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. Ultimately, their aim is to win a championship. If that's what they think the best play is to win a championship, they're completely 100% within their legal rights to do that. So, yeah, it was a massive commotion and show if this was an act. So I think on that basis, and how we've got no reason to assume that Thierry would lie to us all either. So,
yeah, I mean, it was interesting.
Yeah, I think we have...
Sorry, carry on.
No, I'm kind of running out of steam.
It's interesting that he kind of said that, you know, he could have done that anywhere from that refuel zone to the start of stage six. He could have, like, you know, he could have stopped anywhere, but to have a, you know, to fix the problem or whatever. But the fact that it sort of, he stopped right in front of the time control, it would be so obvious. Do you know what I mean? Why would you do that unless you had a problem, an actual problem? So that's, I suppose you can, that's sort of another bit that goes into his favour. But anyway, I think we'll close the page on that for now and see what happens in the rest of the year. The next the topic we really must discuss is Adrian Formo. An absolutely remarkable performance, easily his best drive in the WRC to date, to score a maiden podium, finishing third. And as you said, you know, earlier, he was actually second in the standings come Saturday. So he got the 15 points on offer there. So an incredible performance from him. Really, really impressive and great for the M Sport team too, who have obviously stuck with him for a while and believed in and had faith in him that he will deliver eventually. What are your thoughts? I mean, again, it was the other feel-good story of this rally, wasn't it?
I guess my immediate thought is, when is Rich Milner's birthday? Because at Malcolm's birthday, Adrian went and delivered this second place on Saturday.
Yes.
So is this a thing that's going to inspire him to come up with...
You think he was promised a birthday gift or something?
But yeah, all jokes aside, I think that is the thing that Saturday in particular is the day that really marked this out as an incredible performance. And now, it's not to say that he shouldn't get credit for getting through Friday, because there were plenty others and plenty others you would have expected to, and were bigger favourites to the rally that didn't. So it is to anybody's credit to get through a day that was as challenging, as difficult as that. But it was Saturday where the bar was raised, because across that afternoon, yes, Evans took time out of him, but it was negligible. Adrian held on in a completely fair fight to defeat Evans, a former winner of Rally Sweden, a championship contender, a driver with far more experience. So that, to me, was super impressive. There was that mild scare, shall we say, on the final stage of the day. I guess ironically caused by his teammate stuck in that snowbank form, almost went into, he's almost distracted by it. So that would have been a really bad story if that had gone down, but it didn't happen. He managed to escape tragedy. So he got away with it, drove on, collected second place, and from there on, yes, you could argue, should he have got second? He probably had enough time to, but was it worth risking it? Absolutely not, because Formo isn't in a driver's championship fight this year. As much as he'd love to be, he knows he isn't, and he's sensible enough to recognise that and not try and risk everything for it. What he knew was more important was a first WRC podium. So he backed off, got that done, got third place, and for doing that, he ironically sits third in the championship, which is incredible, considering how many other drivers are around him and he might have expected to be ahead. I'm just really super happy, actually, to see that last year worked. Because I think the signs were there. It was fairly obvious that the Formula of last year was a different character back in the Rally 2 car, but he has really unequivocally shown that. He has learned. He's a driver with a plan. He's a driver that understands what he needs to do and how to build up his speed, how to manage his pace, how to be patient. And these are all things you probably couldn't necessarily have said of him 2 years ago. But he's been open and frank about it, that particularly with the benefit of hindsight, that 22 chance just came too early. He's almost done too well when he got his debut in the WRC car in 21, that it looked like he was ready, but he's not been rallying for a long time. I can't remember what year he started, but it's certainly less than 10 years behind a wheel of a rally car. It is not a long time. It's not a lot of experience. He shot up very quickly. So, yeah, I think he did need that. Arguably, the best trajectory for him would have been 22 in the Rally 2 car than last year's step up, but you can't look at life and work it that way. But yeah, I think it's to M Sport's credit for, again, recognising the right thing to do with him, as they've done a lot with young drivers in the past, and it's definitely to Formo's credit that he's taken the lessons on board from last year. He's done what he was intended from it, and he's shown that he's learned from it. Really, really, really impressive performance for me.
We caught up with Adrian just after the podium, and this is what he had to say, because it was quite an interesting little short interview with Adrian, just to go through the emotions of scoring your maiden WRC podium.
It's really great. It was my only fourth rally on snow, so you can imagine I can be really proud of it. First ever podium on the top level after the second rally of my coming back, so really, really pleased about it. We are still in the championship. So it's crazy, so really, really positive. Still a long way to go, but for sure I was really, really pleased. We had many different conditions also, yeah, with the snow, heavy snow, like that amount of snow. Yeah. We were still on the road, so we didn't have a really good position. And to get to the point where we get a podium with the condition we had, fantastic.
So what did you expect coming here? What was your target?
To be fair, no, my target was P5. And I was like, if we are P5, I'm happy. Now to get to third, P2 yesterday, so we took the point for the second position. Today there was no point to fight with Elfin. We had the points from yesterday, so we can just let him go and we'll take the other points that we are carrying.
As you can see, that meant an awful lot to him. And as he says there, like, you know, there have been people that had told him that, you know, he might not make it, you know, he's not got the talent, but he's still held firm, he's kept believing in his dreams, and, you know, fair play to him, he's never given up, and that is a sort of, a mantra that everyone can understand and live by. You know, if you've got a goal that you want to achieve, you got to stick at it, and it will eventually come. And I have to say, like, you have to give Adrian all the credit, because it wouldn't have been easy to go through 2022 and then last year and to sort of rebuild himself. But he's gone about it. He's done it. And interestingly, you're talking to M Sport on Sunday, actually. He's working with a new engineer at the team. And apparently, like, they've really gelled so quickly. And there's a lot of credit that needs to go to the engineer as well in this sort of partnership. They seem to have really gelled quite fast and are delivering results already. So it seems to really be all sort of falling into his favour at the moment.
That's interesting to know, actually. I didn't know that about his engineer, but that is a really nice tidbit of information. So thank you, Tom, as always. I think the thing with Adrian that I always think is easy to forget is that he was training to be a doctor, wasn't he? Before rallying got serious. Now that in itself, that's the safe route, isn't it? It's a very good, noble thing to do. It'll pay him well. It's something that the world will always need. As much as we love it, the world doesn't need a rally driver. And rally driving is expensive, right? Unless you can get to where you've got to at this level now, it's not going to earn you any money. So it was a huge risk to pursue that dream. So I'm really happy for him that he's managed to he feels that he's accomplished that and he's proved something. And again, you never know what happens in everyone's backstory, do you? I guess everybody in life always faces some sort of challenge, whether it's a moment of self-doubt or somebody else close to them doubting them or whatever. But to overcome that, yeah, no matter what happens now with FOMO's career, you can't regret the choice he's made. He is now a WRC podium finisher. That will stay forever. No matter whatever happens in his life, in the world even, that is a fact that will always remain. So, yeah, he can be proud of that. And I think he's got a very, very encouraging season ahead of him if he keeps performing like he has done.
What I also liked there is he's very modest as well. He knows he's not getting carried away by this. Like he said, I've got to keep my feet on the ground. Okay, I've got this podium now, but it doesn't mean I'm going to be getting podiums every week. I've still got to learn. I've got things that I need to do. And I really, really appreciate that. I think that's a great mindset to have. The fact that he's quite grounded as a driver. And also, I sort of go back to the time where in 2022, when he had some of those big accidents, he went and helped the team repair the cars. You know, he's one of those guys. He's a proper team player. And I think, yeah, he's a credit. He's a credit to the WRC and a credit to the M Sport team at the moment.
He is. But Adrian, if you are listening, we've been very nice to you for about 10 minutes flat. So he owes a beer now.
Well, we should talk about the other big topics for the other drivers. Obviously, as we both said, we thought Cali Robin Perrin, and I imagine everyone thought he was going to win this rally on his return. It was sort of billed as, you know, this is the return of the world champion. He didn't disappoint to start with. You know, things went exactly the plan. Stage wins, early rally lead. But he proved again, he is human. And he had an error on stage four. And that was it. Game over. I mean, a bit of a shock for everyone, you think?
Yeah, massively. As anyone that listened to our preview podcast will know, I was quite emphatic in my assumption and belief that Cali would win. But it turns out I was talking about the other part-time Finn, everyone. So ignore what I said completely. But yeah, huge surprise. I think in a way, actually, the surprise was almost neutered a little bit by the exit of another world champion that had happened before him on the stage. So actually, like, this was still huge, but it wasn't, somehow it didn't feel quite as big as it might have done because a certain Mr. Tanak also ran into trouble. But yeah, like, it's... The only thing I can think of is that it was just a bit of a quirk for Robin Perry running at that point in the road because it's not something he's used to. Like, he seemed to suggest that the snowbag he came across had been effectively destroyed, and that made the whole thing much more catastrophic when it came to the impact of the front of his car. It's just not something he'd ever had to deal with. Yeah. He's just been caught out, effectively, which happens to everyone. But yeah, it certainly wasn't in the pre-event script, was it? To see Robin Perry
parked up on stage four. If he got caught out, whether that was where Tanak had had his incident and the bank had been removed. That was my sort of thinking, but I don't know if that's correct or not. If that might have contributed there.
That's a good point. Interestingly, if I remember correctly, and I can't remember whose car we were riding on board with at the time, probably would have been Lappy, because Robin Perry was far down. But obviously the replay then wound back and showed us where Cali was, because he ended up parking the car up on an escape road, didn't he? I'm fairly sure that was either a corner or two before where Tanak had his.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm pretty sure Lappy were in the corner, and then there was like the remnants of Hyundai on the road that had then. So I don't know, actually. I've not sat and watched the whole back or anything.
It's not been captured by any fans or any. No one's really seen exactly what happened. So it's quite a bizarre one. All we've seen is a car parked up on the road.
Like, it's a mystery.
But yeah. Maybe, yeah,
it's, maybe. It's a dumb.
So maybe we
drank it. It's like WRC Cluedo, this, isn't it?
But yeah, anyway, it was... fact of the matter is he admitted it was an error. He held his hands up, made a mistake, got caught out. And yeah, that was over. But as you said there, the stage four was quite a newsworthy one because, as you said before that, Oit Tanak was pushing. And let's not forget, he was actually very impressive in those first few stages because of his road position. He was actually sitting third. And was the best of the sort of early runners, shall we say. I mean, okay, yeah, that sort of makes sense. But he was really sort of in contention. And he was just obviously pushing, and he's found a snowbank, damaged the radio, similar to Cali. And Cali, he carried on using EV power and then sort of stopped on the stage. And then there was a very, very close, narrow near miss with Adrian Formeau behind, who was caught by surprise by the stricken Hyundai and just managed to squeeze through. So yeah, it was again. It's been an interesting start for Tanak's season at Hyundai. Two errors already in the first two rounds. It's a bit unlike Oit, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Monty was Monty. I think that corner that caught him out was, he wasn't far from the only one to go off there. There was three of them, wasn't there? And in isolation, that wasn't too bad. It was the start of the season, his first ride back in the team. He still got fourth place. Yes, he was outscored by his two expected main rivals, but good points on the board, move on. This, coupled to Monty, now looks like more of a problem, doesn't it? Because he's now got already less than half the points of Evans, who's second, with Thierry a bit further ahead. So we know what Hyundai's status is this year. Those two drivers, Neuville and Tanak, are their main hope in the Drivers' Championship. They're the two full-time drivers. There will be no team orders until there's a point where they maybe have to. So they desperately want to be ahead of each other. Obviously, they do anyway, because that's how you become world champion. But as the season gets closer to the end, it's a bit of a Neuville-Tanak who can be ahead of the other. And at the minute, Tanak's giving himself a bit of a deficit now to call back to Thierry already. You have to be said, in fairness, it's another typically good start to the season from Neuville. Particularly, obviously, in Monty, where he scored the full 30 points. But even here in Sweden, yes, he had his problems, but he managed to collect fourth and some decent points from Sunday, which cost him a tailgate in his push. But that last stage, it put him ahead of Tanak in the Sunday classification as well, so he outscored Oit there. So, yeah, it was a small mistake, I guess. You could argue a forgivable mistake, but it was still a mistake from Tanak, which, as you say, we're not used to seeing driving errors from him. It's really quite bizarre, actually. Particularly, maybe it's harsh to call Monty a driver error, but it was still, I guess, a mistake behind the wheel. The car didn't let him down or anything. It was something that he could have arguably controlled because others got through the corner. So two in a row, it's unlike him. It's by no means time to start suggesting that his championship challenge is done and it's impossible, but it's not the start he would have been looking for anyway. Certainly not the start that many would have expected. I think a lot of people saw Sweden as his chance to kind of bounce back and potentially outscore the other two. And as you say, he was on course to do that before that happened. And you're right to highlight it, actually, because I'd forgotten he was as high as third. But it's easy to forget in the context of the weekend how it goes down. But he was exactly where he needed to be before it happened. But yeah, the rear just got away from him, and that was kind of it. So yeah, disappointing weekend, definitely.
The pressure's on for Kenya now, though, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, he needs a big result there. He does. Absolute minimum a podium. Realistically, if he's serious about sending a statement, he wants to win it, which he can do. I think Tanak actually has been one of the best drivers in Kenya not to win the rally. Yeah. In fact, that's a weird statement to make. So only two of them have since it's returned. And well, actually, I don't know which is driving there. Maybe you do, Tom, but I don't know which of those two world champions is going to be there. But either way, yeah, I think he's got a strong chance, as do they all, in fairness. We'll not go to Kenya Civic because there'll be a separate podcast for that. But yeah, completely. It does certainly apply a bit more. He can't be having any more of those anytime soon anyway, is the best way to put it.
You mentioned at the top of the show Takamoto Katsuta would have been a real nice story if he'd have won this rally. So we'll just sort of run through what happened to him. He did end up in the lead once Kalli sort of and Oit, their demise in stage four, the lead was handed to Taka. And he was looking very, very good. Very good. It was sort of a head-to-head battle between him and EP. He lost the lead, but then bounced back and got to within 0.9 seconds of Lappi before then making a mistake on stage 10, hitting a snowbank, and that sort of heartbreaking sight of seeing his Yaris sort of just wedged in the deep snow and unable to move back onto the road. For Taka, it was devastating. It really hit him hard. Certainly in the media zone afterwards, he was very, very close to tears. And
I was going to say, you were there, weren't you? So just, yeah. I mean, I've heard about this. Just what was that? Because it's not usual, I guess, for you all to be huddled around the driver.
Really,
and I know they're going to be naturally just,
really tough. Difficult to watch. That's for me probably the first time I've seen a rally driver be sort of very, well, there were tears, there's no question about it. It really did affect him, and it's so hard to see because Taka is probably the most likable guy in the service park, always got a smile on his face, always up for a little bit of a joke, and it's really, you know, everyone loves him, so it was just very hard to witness. But I guess it just shows how much he wants it. He really, really, really does want it. And he's getting closer. And I think that's the only thing you've got to say to him is that, okay, yeah, it was an error. but he is making progress. He's now becoming a factor in, you know, podium fights and now a victory fights. So I guess he's got to leave Sweden, as hard as it would be. He's got to leave thinking, it's going to come soon. I'm getting there.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned sort of the emotion displaying how much he wants it. And I completely agree, but I almost wonder if that's almost becoming the problem now, is that he maybe wants it, he's maybe holding on too tight to it. And actually, it's an easy thing to say for us because we're not in that situation, because Taka must now know, I know he's his biggest self-critic, but he must now know that on his day he can win a rally. He's shown that enough times now. Particularly here, this probably was his best chance, wasn't it? With the way everything was shaping up. But it's hard because Taka, as you say, he's so likable. So it's very hard to like sit here and pick a flaw. But there have been three mistakes in three rallies. I'm struggling to get beyond that. Japan was, I mean, forgivable.
That is a bit harsh on the Japan one.
he couldn't have done much. And again, Monty, yeah. I've got to apply the same caveat I did with Tanak, yeah. in that a lot of people got caught out. Yeah. But there is, for me, there's starting to come a bit. If I put it this way, if I was in Toyota, I'd be going with this angle of not try to bury him, but like just almost try and chill. Just maybe don't try as hard and then see what happens. Is I think he almost wanted it too badly on Saturday in Sweden, and he probably pushed a little bit too hard, and it ended up being, and it's so easy for me to sit here and say this because I'm not a rally driver, I don't know how difficult it is obviously, but I don't know, like it's a very difficult one. I think clearly he has the ability to, and I definitely think this year could be the year where he gets that first win.
Absolutely.
But there does come a time in life where you can almost want something too much and push for it too hard, and it actually ends up having the adverse effect. So in a way, it's almost a shame that it's Kenya next, because a lot of people are going to assume that Taka's going to have a chance there because he's always gone well in the past, and I don't think that's the sort of pressure you could really do with going into the weekend. You could almost do a bit of a quieter one, just sort of picking his way through, and that event is a classic case of where if you do sort of bide your time, it can really reap the rewards, as I guess Sweden ironically was at the weekend. But yeah, heart-wrenching to see it. But yeah, I think there's definitely a bit of a, you could do with the rally where there's no errors next, is how I put it. Because even on, I know it was very small, but on Sunday there was the other skirmish and the snowbank and stuff as well. It's like, we've seen it in the past with Taka, but it's all about form really. You remember that It was 2020 when he had quite a few serious crashes in a row and things weren't looking great. Then in 22, he had that incredible run. Sorry, I had an existential crisis in myself. But yeah, 22 had that massive run of just consistent points finishes.
Yes,
so once he starts building a role, it will build up. Yeah. So this is what I think he needs now is a couple clean rallies. Keep good. I'm not saying he just drives around backing off with no speed, but focus on finishing first rather than pushing too hard. And then naturally, the speed will then come with it because we know the speed is there. He just needs now to have the complete weekend, which so far he hasn't unfortunately managed to have.
He sort of almost needs to adopt a bit of a Formosa strategy, doesn't he? What we've seen with Adrian.
It's a good comparison, actually. Yeah, that is a good comparison because I think the difference in Formosa now compared to 2 years ago is that if this was Sweden 22, I think Foreman would have put it in a snowbank on Saturday, trying too hard to stop Evans passing him. But now, because he's learned a strategy and a method how to manage himself, he didn't. It's patience, isn't it? Effectively, is the word I'm looking for. It's knowing when the right moment is. And again, Taka's incident on Saturday, it happens. It happened to Tanak. It happened to Robin Vera, two world champions. So we can't dig Taka out himself for making an error, but there are so many. Like, he was only 0.9 off. He had 2 days of rallying to make that up. So I don't know. Like, I'm not privy to all the information, all the data, but yeah, if it was me, my advice would be just try and relax. Just let it come to you rather than chasing it 100 miles an hour, if that makes sense.
It's very difficult, isn't it? It's very difficult to judge. We can't, you know, until you've walked in someone's shoes, you can't really sort of know what they're going through and everything. So it's always very difficult. But obviously, you know, he's His time will come. I'm pretty confident we can say that. His time will come, and when it Me does, too. It'll be all the more sweeter for him. So we should move on to quickly to round up the WRC2 and junior WRC categories. In WRC2, a dominant performance from Oliver Solberg, and the second time he's won this in a row in Rally Sweden, WRC2 win. But I thought what was perhaps most impressive about this was his performance on Friday. Obviously, we had heavy snowfall, which really turned the leaderboard and the stage times on their heads, because the Rally 1 drivers had the worst of the conditions. The Rally 2 drivers had better conditions. And as a result, we actually saw Linnemeyer actually win an outright stage in the Toyota GR Yaris Rally 2, its first ever stage win. But we also had Oliver Solberg sit third overall at the end of Friday, which was absolutely incredible. Oliver Solberg really has kicked off his season now, and he has to be the man to beat, surely, this year.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at it and think, oh yeah, Sweden's Oliver's territory, so he's going to get it done. But we all said that about Cali, and look what happened. So you have to make it to the end, you have to get the job done. And he didn't put a foot wrong all weekend, did he? As far as I could tell, unless I'm forgetting something, there wasn't a single error from Solberg. And to be third overall was amazing. Obviously, as we know, there were circumstances in that, but it was an incredible story to have at the end of that day. And in a way, I'm almost sad it never actually came to be that he got that throughout the whole weekend, because that would have been mega. But he was still fifth place, which equals his best ever WRC result, bizarrely. Was it Ypres in the Hyundai 2 years ago, wasn't it? So, yeah, great weekend. As you say, got his season on track and well and truly proved that, I guess, the Skoda is it still the car to have? I don't know. Maybe too early to make such a definitive statement, but I think Skoda have definitely done a wise thing in getting Solberg into their family, put it that way. He's given them a very good chance of winning things this year.
It would have been so interesting to see how Oliver would have gone in a Rally 1 car this weekend. That was what was going through my head, because I was like, if he's able to do this, okay, yes, you said conditions sort of helped him, but it would have been nice to see what he could have achieved if he had the top equipment, shall we say.
Well, do you remember how good he was in Arctic Finland 3 years ago now, when that was his first ever start in a top quad? Like, and he's a much better, more accomplished driver than he was then. So, yeah, I had the same thought, to be honest. I think he could have seriously been up there. But hopefully we won't have to wait too much longer in the future for Solberg to get back into top class car.
Absolutely. And junior WRC. So this kicked off in Sweden, 5-round championship, a record 19 car field, which is absolutely excellent to see. But also we had some interesting developments in terms of the four FIA Rally Star graduates were taking part. Certainly Max Smart, who was his first ever rally on snow. So it was going to be a baptism for fire for him. But he ended up finishing with a point, or a couple of points, actually. So, the junior WRC was won by Johansson, the Swede, a debutant. It was a really good battle. Good to see. He absolutely dominated. But also, we must say, Robert Jurgensen, the FIA, one of the FIA Rally Stars, the European winner, was second. A great start for that little program.
Yeah, it would be wrong to use the word surprised, but I am going to use it, but put that on me rather than on them, in the sense of I was probably forgetting just how good these guys are, if that makes sense, because nobody knew obviously where they're going to filter in a 19 car field. It could have been anyone that was up there, which is going to make this season incredibly interesting. There's probably going to be dropouts, but with that base level, there's going to be a lot of drivers every rally that are fighting, which is what we all want to see in any championship. But with the Rally Star drivers, because none of them are particularly experienced in rallying, then that overrides your head a little bit and you go, actually, I don't know where they're going to filter in. But each and every one of them has had to go through a rigorous process through thousands of talented people applying to get to where they are. So clearly that in itself tells us they are uber talented. And this, I guess, in Sweden was the ultimate proof. We had Taylor Gill was up there as well on pace until he had two punctures in one stage, which kind of completely ruined his chances of a good result. But they were all four drivers. Yeah, completely. I think he had to stop twice, bless him, to change two. So, yeah, not ideal at all. But, yeah, all four Rally Star drivers were there or thereabouts. I think not that anybody was doubting the worth of the programme, and not that anybody in the FIA would have been wondering why they'd done it, but this was vindication for them. that is seriously encouraging for the future, what they're trying to do there, that they could be this competitive from the off in a surface that, as you say, to some of them was completely brand new. So, yeah, really impressive.
I guess then, just to wrap up our Rally Sweden review, I'm going to ask you for your star of the rally, Luke. Who are you picking?
Ooh. Now, Tom and I discussed these things, and we thought about things we could include, but I forgot to think about who I would pick for each category. So I'm going to go off on a whim and say Formo. It would be easy to say Lappy,
that's
I think,
fair
here.
That is,
but
fair.
I don't know. Just I think Lappy's result was more expected than Formo's, and for that reason, that's why I'll give it to Adrian.
I'm actually going to join you on that, because that was who I was going to pick too, because I think when you think of the journey he's been on, and for him to overcome those hurdles, and not to say that Esa-Pekka's journey has been any tougher or any, you know, he's been through a lot too, but I think Adrian has come under a lot of criticism, and for him to deliver and answer the critics like he has done now, yeah, he deserves my star of the rally, I think. Which now moves us conveniently onto our quotes from the rally, which there were some great one-liners this week. What caught your eye, Luke?
You're right, there's loads. So picking one is very difficult. And I won't list any in case I ruin what's coming with yours. So I'll go with mine, and it's purely for his randomness and almost its relatability, was Gregor Munster on Friday afternoon. And I can't remember which stage it was, but sort of describing the conditions of driving like being a child in a ball pool or a ball pit, which is incredible. That instantly when he said that, I understood what it was like, and that's what I loved about it. It was an amazing comparison that I wasn't sure if a driver from Luxembourg would, do you know what I mean? You just didn't know if that would translate into English or whatever, but that it was perfect. And it was just, yeah, it was perfectly random, but brilliant and effective in its description. So yeah, that's my pick. I have a very competitive bunch, I have to say, Sweden. Very good one-liners this weekend.
Yeah, I have to say, that did sort of amuse me when I heard it first up. That was definitely in my candidates, but there were a few there. Obviously, Oitanak on the first day there, where he had a sort of seatbelt malfunction, and ever the honest and honest, he explained exactly what happened at the end of the stage, where his shall we say groinal area got caught in the belt, and it was very painful for him. And didn't he certainly was happy to describe that to the world feed. I think for me it is a kind of an emotional one, I suppose, and I think it's Thierry and in Bradbury the stage there. He had a little nod to Craig, where he said that only the real mayor of Bradbury would have enjoyed that stage. I think that was a nice touch from Thierry to say that with his Craig Breen beanie on at the end of the stage. So perhaps not an amusing one, but it certainly was one that I thought, yeah, that's fair play to him. And I'm always amazed that drivers, their presence of mind straight after a stage to be able to think of stuff like that. My mind would be scattered. So I don't know how they do it. So not only am I impressed by their driving, I'm impressed by their interview skills at the end of them.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. The awareness of where he was at from in there was impressive. And as you say, a very nice hat tip from a teammate and good friend of Craig's. So yeah, hard to argue with your pick there, Tom.
The unsung hero is a tricky one for me. I'm really struggling. But where have you gone with your unsung hero?
I'm with you, actually. It is very difficult. I don't know, because he did get plenty praised, but in my head, I'm going with Solberg here. Because I think it's just too easy to underestimate how good this performance was because of what was expected. Like, he almost had a lose-lose situation where if he didn't do well, everyone would be on his back and they go, oh, this isn't good, not a great start to the year. But if he did win, it's like, oh, well, that was expected. So just on that basis, I think the quality of his drive has perhaps been underestimated. But I mean, there's loads, particularly in WRC2. Geir Linema, I know we got the stage with him, which gave him a bit of credit, but that was an incredible performance. Incredibly unlucky not to get second ahead of Sami Piari. I don't think anybody would have expected Georg to be as close to Sami as he was in identical cars. So he would be a sort of vice pick, a vice unsung hero, but I'm going to go with Solberg. That was my initial hunch.
I'm going to actually go with Robert Jorgensen, actually, in the FIA Rally Star, because we know that he's you know, with... he's got a talent, but this was the time where it was properly on show. This is his first chance to properly deliver and see what the excitement is about. And to get second on his junior WRC2 debut, on snow, I'm going to give it to him because it wasn't much sort of said about him, but I still think that that is an incredible performance. When you, his story of getting into rally, where he was, I think he was doing national service when he saw the advert for the Rally Star campaign, and then was like, right, I'm gonna go into that, and to come through the doing it through the esports method, and then going out and actively going to find drives to help his campaign, and then winning this, and now delivering a podium on debut. He's really gone about it in a very professional way, and this was a, there was probably a little bit of pressure on him to deliver, and he's met it straight away, and we could be dealing with a real talent here.
Yeah, well said. And you know, that's possibly actually a better use of this feature, because Solberg did get some headlines, Jurgensen got next to none, so yeah. That's a very good pick. Very well said. I can't disagree or add anything more to that, really. So well done, Tom. You saved our feature in week one. Good man.
I'm sure I'm gonna fall flat on my face at some point in these segments, so anyway. But yeah, thank you again, Luke, for joining us. It's always a pleasure to chat rally with you. And that's about it for the podcast. We have a little bit of a break until the next rally, which is Safari Rally Kenya at the end of March, where we will trade the Swedish snow for the unforgiving gravel and sand of Safari. So thank you for listening to Gravel Notes. And until the next time, goodbye.